L. Sylvia, your host on SylviaGlobal.com. Joining me tonight, or morning, her time, Istanbul, Turkey, is the CEO of the largest women's philanthropic funding network, the Women's Funding Network, CEO Michelle Ozumba. Michelle?
Hello, Gail Sylvia. Good morning. Good my morning. Time. Good morning. Good evening to you.
It's about 9 o'clock at 9:30 your time in Istanbul.
Yes, yes, I think we're 10 hours ahead of you.
That's correct. Thanks for joining me, Michelle. I'm excited about our conversation because it gives listeners a sense of what Sylvia Global is about, and they'll get a chance to really connect with, I mean, at least get a good introduction to the wonderful work that's being done by the Women's Funding Network. Tell us why you're in Istanbul.
I'm in Istanbul attending the Association of Women in Development, which is an international forum of women activists in a progressive feminist movement from around the globe. And this is a four-day forum of all kinds of workshops for learning and knowledge exchange. And there's about 2,500 women from 120-some different countries who are gathered here this week.
Oh, how often does this conference happen?
They come together every 3 years. I believe the last conference was in Cape Town, South Africa. And this year we're in Istanbul, Turkey, and it's just an amazing experience. The diversity, the energy, the real passion around the whole move for gender equality and justice and women's security.
You represent more than 164 women's funding networks around the world as well, correct?
Yes, our membership is global, although 80% of our membership is based in the U.S., but we have some members based in the U.S. that do all their grant making outside of the U.S., so we really bridge the global community of women in philanthropy through our network.
Talk to us about the history of the Women's Funding Network, Michelle, and how long you've been there and what your vision is for women and for the organization.
Well, the network actually started informally in the 80s with women who were in philanthropy, in institutional philanthropy, who were experiencing the disparities in terms of not just gender inequity, but also ethnic and racial disparities in the philanthropic area. So they started convening annually, and officially the network, I believe, was incorporated maybe mid-80s, and we're almost 30 years old now as a community of women in philanthropy. I joined Women's Funding Network just almost a year ago and became the CEO 6 months ago. So it's been a whirlwind of transition, but very exciting all at the same time.
Congratulations, Michelle, on your recent appointment. As a new CEO, share with us your vision for the organization and the type of support that our listeners can provide to you.
Thank you, Gail. I am very, very excited about the opportunity to serve in a leadership role because this is an amazing community of women leadership throughout the network. And what I believe our greatest asset is this infrastructure of women foundations and women grant-making funds all over the world who are all sharing the same value that investing in women and girls is really the way in which we can transform our communities. And so our vision really for the future of WFN is to harness the collective potential of this network in our ability to influence philanthropy and increase the amount of philanthropy that is going to support women and girls issues. And beyond just increasing the amount of philanthropy is really influencing that philanthropy to achieve greater social justice and equity, not just for women, but for the whole context of women's lives, which really is extended to their families and their communities. So we want to grow our membership. We have, as you mentioned, over 160 member funds, but we think there's lots of growth opportunity, so that's one goal. The second goal is to really increase the, as I said earlier, the amount of philanthropy that flows through our network to support women and girls. And thirdly, really, is to be the export resource, the go-to resource for expertise and knowledge that we have from our experience that really can integrate gender analysis throughout not just our network, but to other sectors, whether it's corporate, business, public sectors that are wherever women are and wherever disparities occur, gender analysis is a way to really increase, reduce those disparities and address them effectively. So that's our, those are our three major goals. And the way in which people can support us, they can visit our website and find out more about us. And we like to feel like we are not just seeking people who can support us financially, but we welcome the opportunity to meet others who share our passion and share our values to build our community of relationships across other sectors. So, of course, financial and philanthropic support is important to us, but so are relationships that just increase our effectiveness and our relevance to the larger community.
Can you define that a little bit clearer for me, Michelle? Define philanthropic, philanthropy and philanthropic gifts. You know, and most often, because, and I'm asking the question because so often, you know, we associate the word philanthropy with people of great wealth and generally Caucasian Americans, and that's not an accurate complete here. And so, diversifying this discussion around that word, the image of that word, would be helpful coming from you if you would provide us with a definition for what you mean, what you comes to mind when you use that word and make this statement.
Well, thank you for that question, Gail, because philanthropy is a big word. It's a word that I didn't even know existed till way, way, way beyond my life here, and because it is, as you say, it grew out of a certain culture of industrial wealth, and which was privileged white men, and it could be either their direct philanthropy or their wives who became involved in community to use their wealth to do charitable activities and see their giving as charity. Well, I think the work that we have done at Women's Funding Network and our commitment to diversity and to democratizing philanthropy, which really means there's room for everyone to give. It's really about giving and not so much fee for service, and it's not even charity. So when we say philanthropy, we really are talking about cultural context of giving and how we can expand the notion of the traditional mainstream philanthropy that we're all familiar with in terms of the major foundations and institutional donors, where individuals have a role to play in many ways in which they give. So if for someone who's making, you know, $40,000 a year, their check of $100,000 is philanthropy, and it's significant philanthropy. And there's a lot of research that shows proportionately, African American community is very philanthropic, and they give a disproportionate amount of their money to support. It can be classified as philanthropy, put it that way, because they are giving, and they're giving within their communities, they're giving within their cultural institutions, and this kind of giving is not captured very often in the mainstream traditional philanthropic sector. So WFN is very much committed to increasing and recognition of cultural philanthropy and bringing that into our mainstream conversation so that the African American community in particular and other communities of color are not just seen as the recipients of wealth-based philanthropy, but they're also very much giving as well. And really there's a lot of self-determination and self-help that's going on that could very well be seen as philanthropy and should be seen as philanthropy.
How does it appear in other cultures such as the Latino culture, Asian American culture? What is it, how does philanthropy appear in those environments?
It's very similar. If you think of families that come here through immigration from other countries, particularly Latino community, their coming and working and sending money home is also philanthropy. and because they are giving back, and they are giving to not just their families, but they're giving to their communities, their villages. A lot of that kind of philanthropic behavior and philanthropic practice is not called philanthropy even by the people who are doing it. So I recently had a conversation with the president of Hispanics in Philanthropy, and they are also, in a similar way that we are doing at WFN, looking to really lift up and increase the recognition of Latino communities' philanthropic work and their the fact that they are not just recipients, they are also on the other side of giving. So I think it's a movement that's beginning across many diverse communities, whether it's Asian new immigrants and multi-generationals who've been here, who are now very much engaged in the economy. The Latino community and the African-American community are all increasingly aware of the need for us to be major participants in philanthropy on both sides of the table, giving as well as directing and receiving resources that strengthen our communities.
Yeah, this is really intriguing to me that that discussions are beginning to take place at this level around the word philanthropy and immigrants who send money back to their countries, to their villages. Have there been any studies on the economic impact of those dollars in the category being categorized as philanthropy? Because so often we don't hear it addressed in that manner.
Yes. I don't know. I'm not aware of specifically of research around the immigrant money that's sent back to their home countries that the philanthropic sector has commissioned or put out to us. I do know that there are studies that have shown that can tell you how much money goes back to these economies, but it's not usually seen in the lens of philanthropy. You know, but I'm aware of people here who from other countries, and they create foundations to support their home villages, their hometowns, not just their family. They're building hospitals. They're sending mobile clinics back home. They're doing libraries. They're doing educational foundations. So all of this is going on, and I think it's important to lift that up for recognition and acknowledgement, because it will reframe how philanthropy is defined, but also who's engaged in philanthropy. And that's very, very important that we do this so that we change the paradigm of a sector that, you know, too often is still defined from its original formation out of the industrial wealth. And so much has changed in the recent last couple of decades that I think that's why it's coming to fore now. It's a movement that can't be ignored anymore.
Where is this discussion taking place?
Well, at WFN, we have a group of African-American women who came together under the umbrella of a Black Women Donor Action Group, and these were women who recognized the need for to raise the hand and say, we are philanthropists too. I know the Association of Blacks and Black Fundraising Executives are having similar conversations. The 21st Century Foundation, which has been a really seminal African-American philanthropic organization, has done a lot of research, and I think they are the ones that we look to help document the history. So I think that, and as I said earlier, the Hispanics in Philanthropy are having those conversations. So we imagine that we will come together across these sectors in the near future to share what we're all thinking and planning and strategizing so that we can support each other's efforts across these communities and organizations to achieve greater impact and momentum.
I think this is very exciting and very, very important, because it begins to, you referenced it as shift the paradigm, you know, it begins the re-imaging of philanthropy.
Yes.
And it addresses the diversity of philanthropy globally and shows a global presence of diverse Americans, a diversity of people involved at a global level beyond just our immediate communities. And that there's a tremendous amount of power and potential in that coming to the forefront.
I agree. And I think for us who are in these executive roles within philanthropy, it's important because often it's also a power paradigm shift.
Yes.
If you're a person of color leading these organizations, it's easy to be perceived as a poster child for the issue or the cause of the
yes.
nonprofit that you're leading.
Yes.
When your people who look like you are perceived only as the recipients and beneficiary of wealth-based philanthropy. So if we can really mobilize our communities to be perceived, not just perceived, but actually recognized and engaged and included in these high-level philanthropic conversations, then it also has an impact on our being able to fully leverage the power of these positions and the opportunities we have in leadership in a very different way. So there are multiple dynamics why this global move to have inclusive and democratized philanthropy is so important. It'll have a ripple effect throughout the nonprofit sector, I believe.
Well, this is very, very encouraging, and I look forward to participating in more interviews and discussions around this topic, because that was actually the fuel behind much of that fired the launching of SylviaGlobal.com. It was to begin these discussions and bring these discussions to the forefront globally so mm-hmm. that people who should be engaged and aware could have access to the information and begin to think along the lines of what you just described. So this is very, very exciting. Can you distinguish for the listeners the difference between the Women's Funding Network and the Global Women's Fund? I think that for those who are outside of this arena, if they come across those terms, it may not, be understood that they're two different entities and how your works differ or how they're the same.
Yes, the Global Fund for Women is a member of our network, and they're also a grant-making organization. They're based in the U.S., and all their grant-making is external. So they actually raise money and do significant grant-making around the world to women-led grassroots organizations. We're both based in San Francisco, and we're very much working together in collaboration and partnership in this whole arena. Whereas Women's Funding Network, we don't define ourselves as a grant-making organization. We really are more of a catalyst for the network to really steward the network, the community of women foundations and women funds like Global Fund for Women, and to create the space where collaboration and knowledge exchange and knowledge building can occur within our field of women-led philanthropy. So they are a grant-making organization, and we are not, is the biggest distinction.
What about the International Network of Women's Funds?
Yes, likewise, at which Global Fund is a member there. International Network of Women's Funds started really because the Women's Funding Network, as I said earlier, is started out as a U.S. network, and globally members joined us. And as they grew, there are now about 43 women's funds outside of the U.S. who are members of the international network. So our network really spawns networks and create these communities. And outside of the U.S., as I said, the context of their nonprofit work and their philanthropic work is a bit different. So they felt the need to have their own network to really focus on some of the unique aspects of their societies, and but we come together at WFN, especially at our annual conference, and both the INWF and WFN collaborate on bringing all the member funds together. So we are all consider ourselves partners and colleagues, and we recognize each other's diversity and respect it, but we really are all committed to supporting each other's goals and objectives and success.
That's a real appropriate lead into the upcoming Women's Funding Network WFN Summit, the Women, Economics, and Peace, a summit of women funding networks. Can you talk about that? I know it begins on Wednesday, May 2nd, runs through May the 5th, and you have a very impressive agenda, and I'd like for you to share the information and background on WFN Summit.
Well, thank you. This summit is our annual conference, and the topic was very intentional, as was reframing it this year as a summit, in looking at the intersection of women, economics, and peace, simply because of what's going on around the world and how much of a conflict is really having a significant impact on women and civilians and children in the name of warfare and conflict in a way that has not happened before in our history. So, and we saw the context of the economic context of this and what it means for the economic security of women, not just their physical security and free of violence security, but the inability for communities to thrive economically when we're under these situations. And it's not just a global issue. We also saw this as an opportunity to strengthen the mindset that when it comes to the lives of women, the geography really doesn't matter. And, you know, there's reports now that are well documented about the women U.S. Combat soldiers who are returning back home here with post-traumatic stress syndrome, often spawned by sexual violence that they're experiencing in combat. So we see the opportunity for this summit to really connect the dots globally between the U.S. Issues and the global issues and where they're connected, where and how they're connected. So we are going to be screening a new film that's called The Invisible War that really it's a documentary that's just about to, it's on a screening tour around the country. It will be in the theater soon. And it will, Abigail Disney is the executive producer. And that talks about the women, the U.S., the assault on women and what women are experiencing in the U.S. military. We also have a very diverse lineup of presenters and speakers. And one is Rian Eisler, who is a well-known writer and economist, and she's going to talk about her new book called The New Wealth of The Real Wealth of Nations, that talks about the caring economy, which are all the professions that typically are considered women's work, and how it's not factored into economic models that we use to determine the wealth of nations, and yet it's the heartbeat of nations. And so we're going to put a spotlight on that in her dialogue at the conference as well. And we have Gina Davis, who, as you know, is an actress and now a very much activist, who started looking at the way in which women were portrayed in the media and film. And she's also very much on board with the themes that we're talking about in terms of just the overall economic security of women. And she's going to we'll close with her closing keynote. So we feel the conference really has a lot of dynamic participation and content this year. We're really excited about the response and the opportunity we have to create this space for these conversations to occur.
Who is it open to? Who can attend?
It's open to everybody, quite honestly. Obviously, primarily our members come. This is sort of our capstone event that we put on for our members. But anyone can register and go online at www.womensfundingnetwork.org and find the links to the summit and look at the program and register as a non-member. And I think for even if you're not in philanthropy but have an issue in human rights and civil rights and social justice, you'll find an amazing community of people who share your passion. And we invite everyone to come and be a part of this learning and being part of helping us learn while we're all together. We've got a new feature this year where we're calling Action Labs. And these are going to be, this is a three-hour segment where those who are there in attendance are going to define the topics that they're interested in, and you can host a table of 10 to delve deeply into issues and questions and things that are burning issues from where you sit, from your perspective, either from your community, your organization, whatever is important to you. And we are going to capture all of those dialogue and feed and disseminate it back to the entire conference participation after we're done. So we think that this is a way in which we're leveraging the expertise that we have within the network so that a lot of the leadership this year that we've identified actually resides right among our membership here in the, across the country and across the globe.
So it's a very interactive exchange in addition to incredible information that can empower the attendee to go back and be effective in their works and their calling in this area of women and girls.
Yes, and before the conference, and when once you register, you'll be invited to join an online community through a software program that's called Passable. And when you register, you'll be invited to, so you have to opt in. And you can see who's attending, you can see the conversations that are going on ahead of time, and begin to build your network before you even come in. So by the time you get to Los Angeles, you may have an idea of who you want to meet with, how you want to connect with that person, and also the ideas that people are putting forward for issues that they want to talk about in the Action Lab session. So it was really our effort to create more of an interactive and engaged setting rather than just have panels of experts speak to the audience. We want to have the knowledge build, knowledge sharing throughout the 3 days that we're together.
And you're able to do this with women coming from other countries. I know that you have one session that gives a regional perspective, and there are women comes from Africa, Asia, and Europe, and their unique perspectives and approaches to some critical challenges that they're facing for their women and girls in their communities. So with a global diversity in the summit setting, there's still an opportunity to personalize the discussion to the needs of the attendees.
That's right. And we're calling those sessions speak outs, and they are actually plenary because we wanted to also do more than just have our global participation be sort of token. And this is where the you mentioned earlier about the International Network of Women's Funds, the INWF, are co-hosting and helped us structure this session, because this is where our global members will have a platform to talk about the issues and themes that we're all exploring. And really the idea was for us to have a way for all of us to become aware and increase our knowledge of what's happening among the six regions of the world that define the makeup our network, so that, again, the overarching goal here is to really strengthen our sense of being part of a global network with shared challenges, but also a way in which we can share solution building as a network as well. And hopefully, you know, we believe we can change the world. We think women can change the world, and we think our network will be a part of that.
This is a part of the legacy that continues to move forward. In preparing to close the show, you mentioned that listeners can be supportive with philanthropic, you know, gifts as well as relationships. Can you define the relationship support that the listeners can provide to WFN and the mission?
Well, thank you. We, you know, what's unique about WFN is because we're not a service provider organization, we're really more of the catalyst and coordinator and convener and space creator organization. We welcome to have people in the community who hear about our work and want to get involved, extend opportunities for us to convene and just spread the awareness and knowledge. For example, if you are in a company and you have a lunch and learn culture in your company, we would be happy to come and talk to your employees and make them aware of what's happening with philanthropy and women and girls. And there's a lot of momentum right now in terms of not just giving, but looking at investment portfolios that are have a sense of social responsibility, and there's a whole movement around that that's happening now. And also giving circles. There could be giving circles that people take up and help we can help them figure out where that money can go throughout our network, because our members are really in community And they are not just foundations that write checks, but they are engaged in diffusing the knowledge and leadership potential to the grantees so that we're building capacity and sustainability at the local level. So our invitation for these relationships is really to help us connect people with our member funds and community and get involved locally so that you can be very hands-on and engaged in our mission work. So the two ways are to let us know who you are, and we can connect you with our members who are literally in almost every state in the country. And in some states we have several funds, and some states we have just one, but they have a lot of outreach and throughout their states. And the second thing is to go online to www.womensfundingnetwork.org and read about us and push the donate now button. We always welcome that kind of giving as well.
That works. Michelle Ozumba, CEO of the Women's Funding Network, talking to Sylvia Global from Istanbul, Turkey. Thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to seeing you very soon here in Los Angeles at the Women's Funding Network Summit. This is Gail Sylvia from the SylviaGlobal.com broadcast. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Gail Sylvia, and keep up the great job. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Same with you.
Bye-bye.